The housing market is hot. There are three times more buyers than sellers. It's more important now than ever to make sure you have your financing in place before you even find the house. Get pre-approved today at thehomeloanexpert.com. The Home Loan Expert, LLC.
Start with looky at little Jason Duffner in contention at the United States Open. The former Auburn golfer shot a flat even par, but if you watch round one of the U.S. Open yesterday, even par made you look like one of the greatest golfers on the planet as they played Shinnecock. There is a tie atop the leaderboard with Ian Poulter and Dustin Johnson and Scott Piercy and Russell Henley. But after those four guys, standing tall is Jason Duffner.
Crazy. The par 70 course yielded just four subpar scores. We had 60 subpar scores last year in Erin Hills. There were 27 at 80 or higher, including a score of 92. Your average score was over 76. Brown, I know some people out there, the sadistic viewer likes to see guys struggle. This was beyond it.
It you know, the U.S. Open for me walks a very fine line between watching a stern test of golf and golf becoming unwatchable. And at points yesterday, it became unwatchable. It just wasn't, it was not fun. It was too penal. It just to me, it crossed that line for me that it became unwatchable. But I didn't particularly enjoy it yesterday.
But a lot of that was not the USGA's fault, right? It was the wind. It was Mother Nature. They have it set up hard because that's what they do for the U.S. Open. They test the golfer, and then all of a sudden they get the curveball with the wind coming from a totally different direction.
You can say, well, I don't think it's about direction, Jim. You could say that, but you can't be surprised that the wind is blowing at a course that is basically next to the sea and has no trees. I mean, that shouldn't be a surprise to you that it's going to get windy.
Yeah.
So,
do we not see that in the Open every year?
I think you got to set yourself, you would have to set your course up with that in mind that, all right, how is this going to play if the wind's 35 miles an hour? Well, that's what it was at times yesterday, and it played almost impossible. So,
well, I kept hearing Andy North and them talking about in the post rounds that it was about they'd prepared for the wind coming from the traditional direction, and that yesterday it came from a direction that they had never had a chance to practice.
But that is correct, and that affects the golfer, but that shouldn't affect the setup. I mean, the setup, you should be they're going to always set it up on the edge for the U.S. Open. They won't even par to win this thing. They do not like what happened last year. They won't even par to win it. So they're always going to have it set up on the edge so that it's difficult enough that even par can win it. But when you set something up on the edge like that, it doesn't take much for it to get pushed over the edge, which is what happened yesterday. Well, it got pushed over the edge.
Aren't these the conditions we typically see in the British Open,
though? It is, but those are easier setups. It's not set up the same. You don't have the rough. You don't have the greens. They keep the greens slower over there because of the wind. So it's a much easier setup.
Wonder how infectious this is, because before Tiger went out yesterday, he said, look, I just got to avoid these big numbers everybody's laying out there.
He didn't.
And then he goes out in four putts. I mean, you can say what you want about conditions, but once you're on a green from 40 feet out and you four putt.
That was poor putting on Tiger's part. And that's what one of the most amazing things from this is that Tiger Woods and Jordan Spieth can no longer putt. And I cannot believe we're in a day and time where Tiger Woods and Jordan Spieth can't putt. I mean, Woods is probably the best we've ever seen putting, and Spieth is maybe the best of this generation at it.
Because outside of kicking field goals, would you guys agree that putting's probably the most mental thing in sports?
Probably so, yeah. You can get derailed.
Very mental. Here's Tiger Woods after the round. Listen to how beat down he sounded.
It's tough out there, but I mean, you shouldn't make two doubles and a triple. I had a four putt, and number one, I hit it right through the wind, and then compounding my problem. I actually hit a really good flop shot. The wind actually knocked it down, didn't carry it, and then hit two bad putts on one and two, and for most of the day I just didn't putt well.
Some people couldn't get it to stay on the green. Number seven seems like a hole that should be imploded and relayed out.
That's the one that got him in trouble last time. Last time we were at Shinnecock, that's the one the players really almost had a revolt over. And in an unprecedented move, the USGA was watering the greens, but that green between groups because they lost that green. So that's the one, number seven, that got him in trouble last time. Look, I mean, it's a really difficult course. There's no doubt about that. And if you were watching, you heard him talk about Spieth. He came and shot a 65 you know, back last summer, and he says that's the worst thing that could have happened to me because I know it was set up easier then, and I should have never gone and shot a 65 there because I knew when we got to the U.S. Open it was going to be set up a lot more difficult than what I played it that day.
The best quote of all from yesterday, did you see Michael Collins? He said he talked to one of the regular caddies at Shinnecock, and he said, man, what do the members do, the members of this country club do, when the wind is blowing like this?
And he says, go to the clubhouse and drink?
He says, they stay in the clubhouse and play cards.
Yeah. Yeah. Why would you want to put yourself through that? Golf's miserable and big wind.
Have
like
you
that.
Guys seen the current odds?
Oh, yeah. This is Dustin Johnson's to lose.
Yeah, I'm going to be shocked. I mean, based on where Vegas has this, if Dustin Johnson doesn't win this.
Well, that's just betting, right? I mean, Dustin Johnson very easily could go out there
well, he could. Nobody's
do what everyone else
I mean,
did.
It's Dustin Johnson at 5-2.
I mean, he so easily shot that one under par down away. Everybody else that shot one under par or
he
even.
He was up to three, right, at one point?
Yeah.
Okay.
And everybody else that did it, it looked like they worked their tail off to get there. And it looked like Dustin Johnson, he's one of those guys. Again, I said it after the Masters. You watch Dustin Johnson, you wonder, how does this guy not win every week? How does he not win every single tournament they play?
Well, Justin Rose is 6-1. That's your next guy. Yeah. But I mean, some of the odds on these guys are tremendous. I mean, right now, Phil's 150-1. Well, Jordan Spieth is 100-1. Tiger Woods, 200-1. Rory is 230-1. Bubba Watson is 700-1.
Yeah. Ask me the Dustin Johnson question again.
Does this guy not win every week?
Two words. Paulina Gretzky.
He's got too much going on at home.
Hey, what is the cut line going to be? Is it going to be plus five?
Let me look, Lance. Let me see.
Right now, you've got
plus five still in contention.
Yeah, it is.
Scoobs with us this morning to throw the first pitch. Hey, Scoobs, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good, guys. How are you?
Great, thank you.
I want to run a couple of questions by you dealing with Alabama, but before I get to that, I want to let you know I had a little bit of confusion last night. For a brief moment, I thought I was watching a replay of Washington and Oregon, and then I figured out it was CFL.
Yeah,
Winnipeg has got the Washington Huskies uniform down pat.
He's dead on here,
100%.
By the way.
Edmonton is closer to Green Bay than anything probably in college, but Winnipeg looks just like UW.
Yep. That's crazy.
Old school Oregon and Washington is dead on.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought the same thing last night. I was like, this is a Pac-12 late-night game.
How about Winnipeg's coach, though? First of all, he's got the Dale Jr. look a little bit in the face, and he's just out there in like a long-sleeve workout shirt and shorts. I mean, he did not care about the look.
Yeah, that was obvious. He was a definitely laid-back kind of guy.
Yeah.
But moving forward here, I want to ask you guys, first off, dealing with a little bit of stock, just for fun, how much stock do you put in Talia decommitting from Alabama and committing to somewhere else? That's my first question. What do you think that he's going to go to Alabama, or do you have a lot of stock in him decommitting?
Well, first off, to update everyone on what's happening, if you're not up on what Scoobs is saying, he hasn't decommitted yet. He is visiting Tennessee this weekend, and when he made his announcement in Tuscaloosa, he said he was going to keep his commitment open. It's the time of year we remind you that all of these are verbal commitments. It can be changed often. I think a lot of that ends up on is Tua Tagovailoa still in Tuscaloosa as well, or does he end up transferring elsewhere? Does something go wrong with Tua's time in Tuscaloosa that makes the father, who obviously is a very big part of these guys' lives and likes, you know, he's the family leader, and if he gets a bad taste in his mouth about Alabama or the coaching staff or something, I could easily see Talia going somewhere else.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking the same thing, dealing with back-to-back there, that he might want to make a name for himself. But, you know,
from Talia's point of view, that's a good point, Scoobs, is that, I don't know, Lance, you've got brothers. If your brother was a big stud already somewhere, would you want to do your own thing, or would you want to follow in the footsteps?
It's tough. A lot of people would want to play with family and would want to play with their brother, but at the same time, some guys want to blaze their own trail, so I don't know, to each their own. I don't blame him for going out and at least seeing some other campuses.
Me either.
No, you got to keep your options open. I just think that somehow, some way, dealing with their family is always about being humble and close. But anyway, moving to my next question. I guess everybody likes the insurance policy, you know, because it always keeps you covered. Dealing with this new rule here on the four games for a medical red shirt, do you think that just kind of insured Jalen's, I guess, career staying at Alabama through December. How much do you think it affects it? I hope you guys have a good Friday.
Yeah, thanks. First of all, it's not a medical redshirt. It's any redshirt.
Yeah, the medical redshirt's always been important.
Yeah, we brought this up yesterday with Jalen. It makes it more interesting because it does give him a little leeway. The leash is a little bit longer. You're not in a panic situation that you've got to bail out in August.
That would be remarkable to me that he could play four games at Alabama and still keep that year of eligibility if that's indeed how the rule works. That is how the rule works. Unless there's like some sort of fine print. And what I'm saying, Dunaway, unless there's some sort of fine print where, you know, it's not your first year or something like that. You follow what I'm saying, right? Yes. Your first year of action. Unless there's some sort of fine print where you have to be a freshman for this to apply that I'm not aware of, that would be fascinating. That he could play in four games, shut it down, transfer, and still keep his eligibility. Because correct me if I'm wrong, okay? If this rule goes into effect this year, and it does, right? Am I correct? And he graduates this year, and he only plays four games, then graduates, he can transfer anywhere he wants and have 2 years of eligibility.
That is correct.
That's a game changer. Because the whole decision apparently has been, do you stay and graduate and go somewhere for 1 year? Do you transfer now, sit out, and play 2 years?
Yeah, but now you're asking a guy who I assume has some NFL aspirations to delay his NFL career longer and longer and longer. And that may not be the case with Jalen. He may never progress into an NFL quarterback or an NFL tight end or whatever. But for, people keep trying to see how programs are going to manage this thing. If you've got an elite quarterback or someone who's going to be an elite quarterback, they have no desire. It's about getting to the NFL faster rather than delaying that opportunity. So manipulating this to save a year for the best of the best really is never going to happen.
But Lance, you could see somebody doing that, couldn't you? I mean, if the situations were the same and the names aren't Jalen and Tua, and I've lost the job, I'm going to shut it down after I've played four games, graduate, transfer, and I've got 2 years instead of one. I mean, you could see that happening.
Yeah,
you could. It's interesting guys that decide to shut it down in the middle of a season, but we saw it last year with Blake Barnett.
Yeah.
Was it last year? 2 years ago.
2 years ago with Blake Barnett. And that was purely because they had found a loophole, right, where they could transfer and then get eligible quicker. Now, he's transferred again since then, so Blake Barnett, but he's all over the map.
Going to be one of the things we watch this year once Jalen's played four games? Is that going to be on our radar to say if he plays again, obviously he's not going anywhere?
Hello, Bert. How are you?
Hey, guys.
What are you laughing? Are you already laughing?
I already know what we're going to talk about.
No. I want to make sure we get this story in. The part about you unintentionally helping the Russian mob. See, I don't know how long that will take.
Yeah, and I wonder how many is most of this stuff legitimate?
Yeah. That's the interesting thing is that so the story you brought up, I got involved with the Russian mob when I was 22, and I robbed a train with them. And
on horseback? I want to hear this story, but I also don't want to run out of time.
The reason it went viral on Facebook, it went viral is one of the first comments is by this woman that was in my class. She was like, this story is true. I was on this trip. He robbed us. And then as once she posted that on Facebook, by the way, I had hired a marketing company to help me get views. Once that went out, I remember looking at the views, and it had 20,000 views, and it had 15,000 shares. And I was like, that seems like a lot. And then I went to sleep. I woke up the next day, and it had 3 million views. And I was like, whoa. That night, it had 7 million views. And then right now, it's across all platforms. I think it's got like 100 million views. But yeah, I robbed a train.
So I mean, how does this happen? I mean, how do you go on a college trip?
Okay. Very simple. I went to Florida State. I was not a good student.
Right.
I signed up for Russian class on accident. I thought it was Spanish. And this is how bad I was. It took me like three classes before I realized, I don't think this is Spanish. So I got up to leave, and the teacher was like really hot. She was like, don't go anywhere. I need 14 kids to teach this class. You're the 14th. If you stay, I'll just give you a C. So I was like, Strasbootsy, baby, I'm back. So I ended up taking Russian 1, 2, 3, and 4, never learned a word. Russian 4 was taught in Russian.
Yeah, so the whole class is in Russian.
Oh, dude, I'm sitting in the class like an immigrant at the DMV just staring. And so we get done Russian 4, and she's like, hey, if you go to Russia, we're taking a trip to Russia this summer. If you go, you'll get a minor. I was like, let's go to Russia.
Yeah. You've got a minor in
I've got Russian. A minor in Russian, right? No, I can't speak a word of it. Right. So we go to Russia, and this is 1995. This is when the mob ran everything, and they told us on our first night, they're like, we've paid off the mafia to keep you safe.
Oh, whoa. So the Florida State people have paid off the mafia to keep you safe.
We have figured out how Florida State won all these national championships.
Yeah. Yep, now you got it. It was the mob ran everything, so you had to pay off the mob. If you didn't pay off the mob, then they would just shake you down everywhere you went.
Right.
Oh. So we got these two young gangsters. They called that, the word for that in Russian is banditi. They go, they're going to live with you. They're going to walk you to class, walk you back from class. Don't talk to them. They're in the mafia. I was like, well, they're going to be my best friends.
That's right.
I don't know Russian. Don't worry.
Yeah. I play in a sentence. I was going to say, Strasvutsia, меня зовут Bert, очень приятно, я работаю кошка. Right? And so I plan the sentence out. I go to the guy's door, which is right next to mine. His name's Igor. Knock on the door. He opens the door, and he just goes, "Что?" And I panicked. And everything I... This is a real Russian gangster with the tattoos and the wife beater with the track pants and the cigarette. And he just looks at me and goes, "Что?" And everything I planned on saying flooded out of my head. And all I said to him in Russian in his doorway was, "I am the machine." And he loses it. He starts laughing hysterically. He's like, "Tell my friends." Brings me in a room full of 9 Russian gangsters, all drinking and smoking, and just goes, "Stop. Tell them what you said." And now I'm like, you know, you played the cards you came in with. I'm like, "I'm the machine." Yeah. They're like, "He's the machine." And they loved me. Because I drank shot. You know, look, I'm a Florida State kid. I drank shot for shot with them all night long.
Right.
And all I knew how to say in Russian was, "I'm the machine," all night. "I'm the machine." They're like, "He's the machine." So then one night, the whole class takes an overnight train trip to Moscow. And Igor, the guy that answered the door, I tell him, I go, "We should, like, hang out. Like, we could get a cabin together, and we'll..." He's like, "Oh, I can't go." I said, "Why not?" And he goes, "Different mafia runs train, different mafia runs Moscow. But don't worry, I just said a banditi, they'll take care of you." Sure enough, we get to the train station, and he introduces me to my two new gangsters, Igor and Igor. And he's like, "Guys, this is the machine. If you give the machine vodka, you'll have a great time." And the bigger the two Igors looks like a kid on Christmas. He's like, "Oh, I can't wait to play with the machine." He's excited. And it takes me to first class, right? It's pimped out. Booze, food. And here's the real gangster part. Second the train takes off out of the station, everyone that works on the train comes in to pay their respects. The conductor walks in, rips off the stars and stripes to his shirt, places them in my lap, and goes, "This is a present for the machine." I am
unbelievable.
I am 22 years old.
Right.
Thinking, "Oh, these machine stories might have gotten out of control."
Yes, go too far.
Dude, drink all the booze. An hour later, Igor stands up, and he's like, "Machine, we go to the bar cart to get more vodka." I'm like, "I'm in the mob. I'll do whatever I want." Roll into the bar cart, and he says to me in Russian when we get in the bar cart, he goes, "Machine, go behind the bar and grab bread. Kleb," right? And so I understood him. Part of me is like, "I'm learning the language."
This is educational.
I'm learning it my way, not through flashcards and textbooks, but by joining the mafia. I'm behind the bar excited, like, "Igor, I know what you said." He's like, "Good for you, machine. Can the machine find cheese?" And I was like, "Sir, cheese, I got it. Give me another one." And he's like, "Grab a vodka." I was like, "All right, another one. Give me another one." He's like, "Grab the money." I'm like, "Huh?" He goes, "Grab the money." And I realize at that instant, we're robbing the bar cart, and I'm the one doing it Hooked on Phonics style, right?
Yes.
Grab the stuff.
You're the patsy, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I grab all the stuff, walk out, go back to our first class cabin, and 5 minutes later, our head chaperone of that trip, not the whole trip, just that trip, she was an English teacher who did not speak Russian. She swings our first class cabin door open with that liberal arts confidence, you know? "This is over. You're done," yelling at me. Big Igor just takes a sip of vodka, spits it in her eyes, and goes, "No one talks to the machine like that." Shuts the door and goes, "Screw that chick. This is Russia." He's like, "Don't worry, machine. When it gets dark, we have good time." I'm like, "What are we doing when it gets dark?" Reaches into his pocket, pulls out a ring of keys. He goes, "We're robbing the whole train." And that, yeah, we robbed him. Everyone fell asleep. We robbed my class, then we robbed the whole train. And then we pulled into Moscow, hammered, right? Mm-hmm. 6 a.m., we robbed the whole train. 6 a.m., wasted, sun's up, train stops, door open, same teacher, not mad. Looks at me, smiling, and goes, "I want to be the one to tell you. They've alerted the police." And I look out, and I see two cops talking to my whole class. They're upset. They've been robbed. I get it. Igor sees this, and is completely unfazed. He's like, "Don't worry. I speak to police for both of us." Walks out to the cop, bottle of vodka in one hand, cigarette in the other, grabs him. The cop is taking a statement. Grabs him and starts going, "Screw you. We," like, yelling at this guy. Now I'm looking at the cop who's staring at me, and I hear him just go, "Пойдем, здесь, где?" Which I don't know what that means, but it doesn't sound like, "You're okay, stay there."
Yes.
I walk to the cop who's standing in front of the class I just robbed, next to the gangster I robbed them with. All I'm thinking is, this isn't how I plan on spending my second junior year. Get 5 steps from the cop, who looks impatient. He takes 2 big steps, grabs me by the arm, spins me away from my class, away from Igor, gets right in my face, and goes, "So, I understand you're the machine." Nice. Tonight you party with us. I was like, what? And he's like, yes. Do you like strip club? I was like, hell yeah, I like strip clubs. I was like, wait, I'm not in trouble? And he gets so close, I can smell his morning cigarette. And he goes, no, screw that chick. This is Russia.
Bert Kreischer in studio with us. You can get tickets tonight, 444-0008, stardome.com. So how long did you stay in Russia?
3 months, I think. 2 months. Yeah.
Did it get better?
Oh, it was awesome.
I don't know how it could get better.
Yeah, it was great. I remember when, yeah.
Are you a made man now?
No, it's so funny. It's so funny when that girl post saw the video and commented on it, she tagged everyone in my class who in eventually tagged the mafia in it. Like, the mobsters, they definitely have Facebook too, and tagged everyone. And then someone just hit me up and they're like, hey, we've translated that story into Russian. If you want, we can post it online. And I was like, I don't know if I want it online.
Yeah.
I don't know if I want the mob. I'm always afraid that I'll get a corporate gig. We'll pay like $50,000. You can't turn it down. And they're like, it's in Brighton Beach. And it'll be for the mob. And they'll be like, tell the story one more time. I'll be like, oh. Yeah. It was good.
Would you be fearful to go back to Russia, though?
Nah.
I mean,
have you been to Brighton? I went to Brighton this year for the first time. And it's nothing but Russian mobsters.
I'm afraid. See, I can speak enough Russian to get myself in trouble.
Right.
Like, I was at a car wash one time in L.A., and these two guys were talking in Russian, and I understood it, and I went, oh, and then I leaned over, and I go, «Извините, пожалуйста, меня, я говорю по-русски язык», meaning, like, excuse me, gentlemen, but I speak a little Russian. And I realized they're not sharing recipes. I just jumped into a conversation like,
where the body's buried.
Yeah, where the body's buried. And I'm like, excuse me, boys.
Who do you I'm think listening. You are, the machine?
But what if you were walking down Brighton Beach and there were posters of you everywhere that said the machine, yeah, and you were right. Like a returning god or something?
Yeah, you don't know how popular you really are.
He's real.
The problem is, like, I like that stuff. Like, I like when we went to Mexico, we had a... We paid off some for one of my TV shows. We paid off some tough guys to watch us, and I loved hanging out with them. I loved it. And then they heard the machine story, and this one guy, Luis, was like, "Ven acá, por favor." And I was like, "What?" And he goes, "La máquina. We want to hear the story." And I was like, "Okay." And I go, "But I don't speak Spanish good enough." He goes, "Don't worry. You tell it, and I'll translate it to them." So I told the machine story to these mob guys in Spanish, and it was. Totally didn't work because this one guy's translating it to them. He's like, La Máquina.
We're all fascinated by mobsters, but the Russian mob, those guys are ruthless. It's another level.
Man, they don't play. One of my favorite stories is we stole a boat one time. And
so nonchalant.
I know. Just a boat. It was
Russian. I don't know what the holiday is, but it's like Russian May Day. It's like their New Year's or whatever. Everyone goes out in the Kiev River into the Gulf of Finland, and all the boats are taken up. I wake up early in the morning. I go over to Igor's room. All his buddies are there. They're all drinking beer and eating this dried fish. And I said, hey, we're getting ready for the boat, right? And he was like, no boat. I go, what? He goes, I have no boat. Everyone says boat. I have no boat. I go, but my whole class is in the lobby. Like, they have, like, C-bands on, like, ponchos. They're ready for the boat. He goes, I have no boat. Busiest day of year on river. How do I have boat? And I was like, I don't know, but they plan on you having a boat for us. And the teacher comes in. She goes, Igor, you ready? He goes, let's go. And so, Paizion is what they say. So we grab the beer, and I'm walking with him to the river. We were a block away from the river. And I know there's no boat, right? And all of a sudden, one of his buddies comes up and goes, Igor, we have boat. And Igor's like, we have boat? He's like, we have boat. I'm like, we've got the boat. We get down to the river, and there is a perfect boat waiting for us. Like almost like he had planned it 8 months in advance. We start loading the stuff onto the boat, and the dock master comes down, sees us. He's like, gentlemen, I need the papers for boat. And his buddy lifts up his shirt and shows a gun. And he goes, here are papers. And the guy's like, all right, have it back by 3. And then I went and told my teacher. I go, hey, Igor's friend has a gun. And they were like, you have to drink with them to keep him calm. That was okay. So I sat in the galley. You know how you get seasick if you get into the bottom of a boat?
Right.
I sat in the bottom of a boat with these guys drinking vodka, getting seasick. Like, I don't get seasick, but definitely when you're that, it's like hot, middle of summer. But smoking cigarettes, that's back when I smoked cigarettes.
Do you have time to hang one more segment?
Yeah, of course.
The machine hangs with us one more segment. I think in the next commercial break, we have to give him our money. Stay with
Got to ask you, because the Russian stories are crazy, all legitimate. How much validity to this Van Wilder Rolling Stone article where you were in school for 6 years and the Ryan Reynolds character was actually based on you?
Yeah. In 1997, Rolling Stone discovered me and called me the number one party animal in the country. Like, big 6.5-page article, changed my life. Like,
did they know your criminal background?
No. What happened is a guy wanted to write an article on Florida State, and then he came down and met me, and everyone just started telling him stories about me, and he was like, oh, we'll just make the story about this kid. And so they wrote this big article about me. Oliver Stone optioned the rights to my life. I moved to New York, started doing stand-up. Like, 6 months later, Will Smith discovered me, and they had written scripts about me. This is all kind of, I guess the word's hearsay, but this is all word of mouth, like from what I've heard of from executives at National Lampoon.
Did you get a cut of this?
No. So
that seems fair.
Yeah, this.
they all wrote scripts for Oliver Stone about a journalist. Had to be about a journalist and a party animal. And then the option fell apart. And I started working with Will Smith. Everyone moved forward. And then like a year later, my agents called me and they're like, hey, man, that option with someone wrote a script and it now got made and it's coming out as a movie. Do you want to sue them? And I was like, what? And I had one of his managers was named Barry Katz, who's on the phone. He was like, Papa, there's two people in this business. People who work and people who sue. And so I just, and by the way, the movie didn't come out strong. So it wasn't like a hit. It's a pop. It's a cultural hit. So I had nothing to do with the movie. I didn't write it. Two guys wrote it. They just, I guess they were inspired by the article from that option. So I had nothing to do with it. Man,
but that's kind of cool that they would do something like that on you.
It's cool. It would be much cooler if I knew Ryan Reynolds. Like, I would love to have his.
But see, Dunaway here went to school. You were 6 years, right? I was a 6-year guy.
Oh, absolutely. I was a 6-year guy.
That's how I went to college. That's how college was. Yeah. Dude, classes were like $45 a class.
Yeah.
At Florida State. Are you kidding me? Who's going to stay there for 4 years? I was there 6.5 years. Oh, the best 6.5. I was there for the 90s. Like, I was there longer than grunge music was around. Like, my freshman year came out, Nevermind came out, and he shot himself my second junior year. So, yeah, I
But in the heyday of Seminole football, too, you guys were dominant.
Dude, Warwick Dunn and I graduated together. We sat next to each other.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Hey, he's an awesome guy, man.
He's the greatest guy in the world. And I said, he was like, you're the party guy? I was like, yeah. I go, you're moving to Tampa because he had gotten drafted by the Bucks. He was like, yeah. I go, hey, man, if you want, I have friends who can, like, take you out and show you a good time.
He's
like,
he said, no thanks.
He goes, I'm going to pass.
Burt Kreischer is with us. Burt Kreischer, Stardome.com for tickets. It's a great night there at Stardome to go see Burt. You will tell that Russian story again, right?
I tell that every show. Everyone wants to hear that. I tell it at the end of every show. I do an hour's worth of new material. I have a Netflix special coming out in August.
Is that what you are, a storyteller?
Yeah, but like I still tell jokes, but like I enjoy a good story better. I enjoy I have another one. I can't really tell you the name of it, but it's another story that's gotten very popular.
Well, that's an art. I mean, not a lot of guys can tell stories.
It's not as much an art as it's being comfortable with silence. Like, it's like, because a story doesn't need to be funny throughout the whole time. You just got to have a good arc, a good log line. You got to open strong. Like, I have one story. I could never figure out the opening. And then one day, my buddies heard me say it on accident. And they're like, that's the opening. And the opening is, I used to think Anne Frank and Helen Keller are the same person. Like, I thought they were the same person growing up. And so I had no clue that they were different people. And I found out at the Anne Frank house, they're not.
Burt Kreischer, you can hear the remainder of that story.
All of a sudden, 6.5 years, not shocking me at all.
Yes. I am blown away with your Russian tongue, though. You said you could only speak one word.
Yeah, you learned a lot more.
Yeah. I sound like a vampire when I do it. We robbed one train.
7:30 is the showtime. Well, that was tonight, 7:30 tonight, and then 6:30 and 8:45. On Saturday to see Burt Kreischer there, Stardome.com. I'm still baffled. Do you know Oliver Stone? Like, did you meet him at all?
No, great story. I never met him once, right?
Right.
So one day I'm doing Good Morning America, and we're getting in an elevator. It's a big freight elevator that takes you down to the first floor where they're doing an outside feed. And I get in, and they go, hold the elevator. And the lady looks at me, and she goes, I apologize. We need to wait for Oliver Stone. And I'm like, okay. I'm with my whole team at Travel.
Here's the moment.
I go, this is, I know what I'm going to say. I plan it out in my head. Mr. Stone, I'm a huge fan. I have to tell you that, but you changed the direction of my life. In 1997, Rolling Stone magazine wrote an article about me. You optioned the rights to my life. Your company did. And it gave me the confidence to get into stand-up. And now here I am at Good Morning America about to go on air with you because of you. Thank you very much. That's what I'm going to say.
So there was no hard feelings. I mean, you were thankful.
No, it leapfrogged my life.
Yeah.
Oliver Stone walks in reeking of marijuana. And he's got a team, like 7 people with him. So I'm like, all right, it's silence in the elevator. I don't want to be too aggressive. I'll give him a second. Step forward to extend my hand. And the lady next to him goes, oh, my God, it's Bert the Conqueror. And I went, what? She goes, Bert Kreischer, Oliver, this man is the greatest storyteller you're ever going to meet. He's got a show on Travel Channel where he rides roller coasters that my kids love, but we've watched him. He got involved with the Russian mafia. He's this guy. You need to do something with this guy. And Oliver Stone's like, well, maybe I'll check into you. Thank you. The door's open, and I go, it's good to see you. And he's like, I was like, that's perfect. I don't need any introduction.
So to this day, probably has no idea, right?
Has no idea. I had a meeting. I had one meeting with a company. They were like, they had my book on the table. And they're like, we're huge fans. I was like, oh, thanks. And they're like, we want to do a sitcom with you. I was like, cool. And they're like, we think we know your voice. And I was like, okay. And they're like, are you familiar with who we are? And I said, no. And they're like, we produced Van Wilder. And I was like, interesting. And they're like, and we think we could write for you pretty well. And I was like, done deal. And they're like, sorry, one of our partners can't be here. He got a motorcycle accident. I go, who's your partner? And they're like, Ryan Reynolds. And I was like, oh, my God. That's the guy I wanted to meet.
The one time.
I could definitely get in a gay stuff with him.
Bert.
End on that.
Quarterback now of the Baltimore Ravens getting work with number ones yesterday at practice. John Harbaugh taking a long look at him on how they're going to use Lamar Jackson. He's pretty happy with all the compliments he's getting from the coaching staff.
Just come from college, you know, you're a rookie, and have veteran guys look at you like that. It's amazing, you know. A lot of guys not getting looked at like that. And, you know, I appreciate that, you know, the good thing, but I just got to keep grinding. You know, it's a work ethic. I got to keep going out there trying to buzz my behind each and every day for those guys to say stuff like that.
How much do you feel like a young Michael Vick?
I feel like a young myself.
I feel like a young myself good answer. There. I will tell you that we were all excited about Lamar Jackson in the NFL draft as he was rising up. And Harbaugh is experimenting with 2 quarterbacks on the field at one time and how to use Lamar Jackson. You get a feeling that this is not just for minicamp show, that there is a plan to use the guy.
Look, I understand Flacco has got a Super Bowl ring, but we talk about ceilings, and the ceiling for Lamar Jackson, I mean, it's endless right now. And, you know, the biggest problem for John Harbaugh has been lack of playmakers with that offense. You've got a playmaker now. Look, he's raw, and it's going to take a while for him to get acclimated in the NFL, but we're going to see him on the field this year.
Do you think he's the first of the first-round quarterbacks to see the field this year?
I mean, that's the way it's said. I wouldn't have said
Not as a starter, but just see the field.
Yeah, I probably so.
Yeah.
I'm going to go Sam Darnold starts for the New York Jets.
You think so? He'll start the season, you're saying, for the New York Jets.
Yeah,
okay.
I think game he'll one. Be quarterback game one.
The Jets have just got better options right now. They're saying that his grasp of the offense right now, they can't believe how far ahead Sam Darnold is. But when you look at guys like McCown, who's there, and then Teddy Bridgewater, I mean, have you guys given up on Bridgewater?
I have not, but I've also not seen him play any extended time since that injury. And there had to be a reason why Minnesota let him walk. They know it. They know better than anyone else.
Of course, they were loaded up at quarterback, too, Minnesota was.
You were playing in the lounge today. You had a lot of choices. What have you selected?
The 2 that I was going to bring, and you can choose. One of my favorite Beatles songs is A Day in the Life. It's really hard to do, but it's a fantastic song. And then go back to 1994 or 5, Counting Blue Cars by Dishwalla.
That is my favorite Beatles song. So I'm not a big Beatles guy.
I'm not a big Beatles
fantastic
guy either.
Song.
So if you can give me one Beatles song I like this morning in the lounge, right time, right place, man.
All right, this is for Jay Willoughby because he's going to be grading it big time scale.
All right, it's Rockstar live in the Round Table Lounge.
I read news today, oh boy, about a lucky man who made the grade. And though the news was rather sad, well, I just had to laugh. I saw the photograph. he blew his mind out in a car. He didn't notice that the lights had changed. A crowd of people stood and stared. They'd seen his face before. No one's really sure if he was from the House of Lords. I saw the film today, oh boy. The English army had just won the war. A crowd of people turned away. But I just had to look. Having read the book, I love to tell you all. I woke up, fell out of bed, dragged a comb across my head. Found my way downstairs and drank a cup. Looking up, I noticed I was late. Found my coat, grabbed my hat, made the bus seconds flat. Found my way upstairs and had a smoke. Somebody spoke, I went into a dream. In Blackburn, Lancashire. And though the holes were rather small, they had to count them all. And now they know he holds it takes to feel loud but whole. I love to turn you on.
Wow. Rockstar in the Round Table Lounge. With a little Beatles. I think I'm with you, Lance. I think it's my favorite Beatles song. Yeah. Never been a big Beatles guy myself.
I don't like how it heats up in the middle.
Yeah,
I like the more dark, depressing front side of it.
This is John Lennon and Paul McCartney. The thing is the
first down. The College Baseball World Series gets underway this weekend. Your teams are North Carolina, Oregon State, Surprise Washington, Mississippi State, Texas, Texas Tech, Arkansas, Florida.
Yes.
Washington is your betting favorite to be in the college football playoff this year. Take them off the board. The next team of that group that makes a college football playoff.
I'll go Florida.
Over Texas. Texas is in this. College football playoff.
I think both Florida and Texas will make a college football in the next 4 years. Yeah, I'll have to go Texas, but really tight.
I think I'd go Florida. I think I would go Florida in front of Texas, though.
Texas Tech, Arkansas, North Carolina, and Oregon State. And
throw all them away. Yeah. It's really Texas or Florida.
Or Mississippi State, but they're in the West.
That's still hard to see.
I would go Texas in that argument.
So both of you would go Texas over Florida, huh?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Second down.
All right, I'll throw one out here. We talked about Mike Gundy and Mike Holder, his athletic director, sort of being on the wrong side of recruiting there. Which Mike is in a more precarious situation with his front office, if you were athletic director, president, the way the school does business? Mike Gundy or Mike Leach at Washington State?
That's an interesting relationship Leach and Washington State have, and Leach was actively trying to get out of there, though he's winning at a level, Lance, that Washington State really hasn't done since Mike Price. I mean, it's been that long since they won
and
at this level.
It's been a more consistent winning.
Mike Price would go
up and down. I mean, he was like the stock market.
He could get you a Rose Bowl, but then he'd follow it with a three-loss season, right. A three-win season, and you don't get that out of Leach.
I feel like Mike Leach at Washington State's best days are behind him. Am I crazy about that?
Well, I think he's got an interesting quarterback situation this year.
I don't think it ever gets worse than 6-6. I don't think it ever gets better than 9-3. I think he'll hover.
Third down.
Know. Tough question.
More starts in 2018. Would you go Nick Foles with the Philadelphia Eagles or Jalen Hurts at Alabama?
I mean, it's too early to say Wentz is injury prone, right? I mean, that was
a fluke.
That was a fluke injury.
But he was injured in college and missed the season.
Because that's what that depends on.
And here's another thing. Is he going to be 100%
to start the year?
Yeah.
So you think Foles could even get his start early?
I mean, possibly.
Now, we're going by starts now? Is that what you said?
Yeah, starts. Okay. I think I would take Jalen Hurts because I think Jalen Hurts is going to get a start.
I think I will go Nick Foles in this one.
I think I'll go Nick Foles because of the injury factor in the NFL.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I'll go Foles.
Fourth down.
Well, that's a tough one, though.
This is really tough to me. More wins in 2018, Andrew Luck with the Colts or Nick Fitzgerald at Mississippi State?
I think Mississippi State's a 9-win team this year. Maybe 10. I don't think the Colts get to 9 or 10.
I think I would take Fitzgerald.
I'd take Nick Fitzgerald and Mississippi State.
I mean, when you word the question the way you do, obviously injuries
would play into it. Take Luck. I've just got a feeling that he's going to be out there for 16 this year. And Fitzgerald, I don't know if he's going to be healthy the entire season.
Yeah. I would take, if you just question me, Mississippi State wins versus Colts wins, I would definitely take Mississippi State.
Yeah, I would too. I would too.
Why do you keep questioning Fitzgerald's health so much?
I saw the injury. I understand what they're saying.
I mean, yesterday
it's just hard to get
that
injury out of your mind.
Yesterday was the first time Andrew Luck has publicly thrown a real football they play with on Sunday. And you're questioning Nick Fitzgerald more. Now, I understand it was I don't know if it was a more serious injury, but it was later than the Andrew Luck injury. And the only thing we're getting out of Starkville is what's, you know, Mississippi State people are telling us. So until we see with our own two eyes, there's some question there. It's just,
I see what you're saying. It's just hard for me to believe that Andrew Luck's going to miss two full seasons. Although he's coming off of almost missing two full seasons.
he
miss another season. And I just know when he's out there, everybody is better.
But are they that much better in a division where they're not as good as the Texans, they're not as good as the Titans, and they're not as good as the Jaguars anymore?
But to me, it's not the same roster. It's the same caliber roster when Luck was there before and he took them to an AFC Championship game. He is that good.
I just think that division is so much better now.
It is. That's true.
When Luck first got there, it was almost 6 automatic wins.
Almost, but not anymore. Division. Not with Deshaun Watson at Houston, not with Mariota at Tennessee, and then Jacksonville, oh, by the way, was just in the AFC Championship game.
I mean, there was a moment it was Andrew Luck and the Colts, and that was the worst division, the least competitive division in the NFL.
It was, but you can convince me that the Colts finished dead last in that division this year very easily.
Yeah, that's
you
what
can
I'm saying.
Very easily convince me of that.
I mean, I think they're the worst team in
probably
their division
so.
Roster-wise.
The housing market is hot. There are 3 times more buyers than sellers. It's more important now than ever to make sure you have your financing in place before you even find the house. Get pre-approved today at thehomeloanexpert.com. The Home Loan Expert, LLC.